First Coast Connect with Melissa Ross is sponsored in part by Baptist Health.
We are heading into month 14 of this pandemic, and here's a question. Should we keep masking up? Good morning. We're live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Just ahead, to mask or not to mask, even if you've been vaccinated. We're getting conflicting advice. Give us a call. It's 549-2937. Then later, a look at some good news around town this Wednesday. But first this morning, we are heading into, I misspoke a minute ago, the 16th month of this pandemic, as July is just around the corner. And let's face it, we're all tired of this. At the same time, Americans are getting conflicting advice about continuing to wear masks. World Health Organization officials are concerned about the new Delta variant of the virus. They're urging even fully vaccinated people to continue wearing masks and taking other precautions. However, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention told fully vaccinated Americans back in May that they no longer need to wear masks indoors or stay 6 feet apart from others. And they've eased advice about testing and quarantine and other things after suspected exposure to COVID. So what advice should we take here? Chad Nielsen is Director of Accreditation and Infection Prevention at UF Health Jacksonville, and he's been a subject matter expert for us throughout this pandemic. Chad, good morning. Always great to have you on the show. Thanks for being with us.
Hey, good morning, Melissa. Happy to be here as always.
And everybody, let us know, are you continuing to mask up when you go into stores, restaurants, what have you? There's no more mask mandate in this area. Let us know how you're handling this and if you've been vaccinated and if that has changed your behavior. Give us a call, 549-2937. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org, tweets to @MelissaInJax, and our Facebook page is open. So, Chad, this Delta variant is a highly infectious form of the virus. It's spread to dozens of countries. It's causing one out of every five COVID cases in the U.S. It's spreading this summer. So the World Health Organization is saying they're very worried about this. They want continued mask wearing. That conflicts with the CDC's advice. What are you recommending at UF Health Jacksonville?
Yeah, so I know this is causing some consternation for the public because, again, we see the CDC and World Health have conflicting recommendations as to what to do. I do think that what you're going to see moving forward is that the CDC will start warming to that idea of putting out another masking recommendation for those who are vaccinated. LA County out in California is already making that recommendation. And really, the idea is recommend people who are vaccinated to wear masks because we know, although rare, you can asymptomatically carry COVID if you're vaccinated. And therefore, you could spread it. And the Delta variant, with its contagiousness, is the real concern there. So here at UF Health Jacksonville, we'll continue to be masking our employees. I urge people, especially if you're in a high-risk age or health category, to continue to mask despite vaccination. I think it's better to be protected than not.
So you're saying err on the side of caution. Other countries, Great Britain, Israel, have had very high vaccination rates, yet they're seeing cases spike up again, so they've partially reimposed mask mandates. However, you know, in our area, there is no more mask mandate anymore. Most places around town, people are sort of behaving as if this is all over with. So how much of a concern is that for you?
Yeah, I definitely think it's going to be a concern here with the Delta variant as it continues to get a foothold here in the United States and in Florida. We're already seeing rises in hospitalizations here in Jacksonville, mostly among people who, anecdotally, we are finding are not vaccinated. So entering into the summer months now where July 4th is upon us and people will be gathering with or without masking, maybe with or without vaccinations, we are anticipating another bump in cases, but it's something we're watching. We hope that the public continues to get vaccinated. We hope that they continue to be smart about wearing masks if they're not vaccinated or if they are. We're just in a wait-and-see mode here.
What would you say to people, especially the vaccinated, who are just so weary of all of this. They're tired of wearing masks. They feel as though they've done their bit. They've gotten their shots. They want to move on with their lives. What's your message to that group, Chad?
Frankly, I'm with them. Being a vaccinated person as well, it's been a long, arduous pandemic for all of us. So for those people who did their part, they got their vaccine, I do think that we've got a little bit longer to wade through the end of this pandemic. And I just ask them to hold their heads up high, know that, yes, they are part of the solution. They've been doing the right thing. But unfortunately, we're not out of this yet.
Do you think schools, businesses might rethink easing up their protocols if we see more cases come to this area?
Yeah, I think you'll see slowing of some businesses to reopen fully. Unfortunately, I think most have already sort of thrown the handbrake off, whether it's restaurants or, retail places. Most of them have already said follow CDC guidance with masking. If you're vaccinated, you don't have to. If you're unvaccinated, please wear a mask. But largely, you can walk into any store or nobody has a mask. And we know that that's contraindicated because roughly only 50% of Floridians are vaccinated. So I think some businesses, if they have been slow to fully reopen, they will go ahead and pause any reopening plans. But unfortunately, most businesses have already opened up wide, and I think it will be very difficult for them to message going backwards.
Tell us a little bit more about this Delta variant and how it's impacting spread of the disease and what you're seeing with the COVID cases at UF Health.
Yeah, so first and foremost, this is the Delta variant that we've known about now for several months. It originated, we think, in India and has since spread throughout the globe. The early literature indicates that it's more easily transmitted from person to person. It causes slightly more severe disease, and it can cause increase in mortality. So we know, though, that the vaccines are effective against it. Johnson & Johnson, Moderna, and Pfizer have all come out and said our vaccines, once fully vaccinated, have high efficacy against this variant. And so what we're seeing now is the rise of cases primarily due to Delta is because it transmits easy, and we still have roughly 50% of Americans not vaccinated. So we're entering into this stage of the pandemic where you're going to have largely two classes of people, one of which is vaccinated and largely not getting the virus or suffering from it, and then another class of people who are unvaccinated that will most likely get the Delta variant if exposed to it. And those are the people who will increase our hospitalizations across the U.S.
It's unfortunate that people can't go into the ER of your hospital or any local hospital and see how bad this disease is. Do you wish you had a video you could show people to convince them to vaccinate?
Yeah, absolutely. Our numbers peaked in January. We had we only have 692 beds here licensed at our facilities, and roughly a fifth of those were filled with COVID patients at our peak in January. Right now, across the city of Jacksonville, hospitals have largely doubled their number of COVID patients from 1 week to the next over the last 2 weeks. So we're continuing to see patients come in who are high risk. They either have multiple comorbidities or they're of an advanced age. But early indications are that a lot of them are unvaccinated. So I can't urge the public enough to get their vaccines to protect themselves from ending up in our hospital.
I know you don't like these binary choices, but is the vaccine more important at this point than the masking? If you had to tell someone to do just one thing, would it be get the shot over masking up?
Yes, I would say get the shot over masking up. Again, it's all important in the phase of ending this pandemic. But for personal choice, if you were to get that vaccine, you are dramatically reducing your risk of ending up very sick or potentially dying of COVID-19. Hard stop. We know what the data says. It's very clear. We have literally millions of data points to prove that. The vaccine is the most important thing you can do to protect your health and that of others.
Let's go to your calls now for Chad Nielsen, infection specialist at UF Health Jax. As the CDC and the WHO issue conflicting advice about wearing masks, we are heading into the 16th month of this pandemic. the highly infectious Delta variant has taken hold in this area. Let us know how you're handling it all. 549-2937. Yvonne on the South Side. Hey, Yvonne. Good morning.
Good morning.
Go ahead.
I just want to say that my husband and I are both still double masking, and I don't care who laughs or makes comments in public loud enough for us to hear. We're going to keep doing that even for those people, because we heard of a cousin in Texas who survived COVID, but he suffered horribly, and he was an anti-masker, unfortunately. And I think he'll be masking up for Delta. And the way people have been careless and even arrogant here in Duval County, I expect that if Delta gets here, it will run wild.
And yeah, it's actually here.
You'll be careful.
Yeah. Have now
get vaccinated.
Have you been vaccinated, Yvonne?
Absolutely. We got Pfizer months ago.
That's great. That's great.
Regency Mall.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Yvonne. You know, Chad, the Regency Mall vaccination site did close last week. I found that out when I took our younger daughter to get the shot. And, well, we ended up having to go to Walgreens because that site is now closed. But that said, there are plenty of options for people to go get a free vaccine all over town.
Yeah, that's right. The federal aid and some of the state support that was opening these sort of mega vaccine sites, unfortunately, has dried up, or they've closed because of lack of activity and lack of people showing up. That being said, Walgreens, CVS, Walmart, there's a lot of different big box retailers and pharmacy chains that are still offering the vaccine at low or no cost. In addition to, your doctor's offices are going to start providing this if they haven't already. So there's still plenty of opportunities to get your vaccine. It might not be at a big mega site, however.
549-2937. Keith in St. John's. Hello, Keith. Thanks for holding. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My concern is that we stopped masking too soon. I think we should have waited until 80% of adults were masked, because right now I see no one masking as I go out into the community within St. John's and Duval County in Florida. And I think that message to demask came out too soon, and I think we should have waited until more people were fully vaccinated.
Yeah.
That's the comment. Thank you.
Thank you, Keith. Chad, I'm pretty sure you would agree with that. We didn't mask up for long enough.
Yeah, that's right. And I mean, frankly, if you look at the data, we call all of this non-pharmaceutical intervention. So things like lockdowns or school closures or stay-at-home orders or masking, they're all interventions to stem the tide of COVID-19 or flu virus or any kind of pandemic. And so when you end those interventions too soon, you'll see spread of the virus continue. And particularly now with a more infectious variant and not a lot of people vaccinated, it's going to continue to spread.
Ray at the beaches. Good morning, Ray.
Yeah. Hey, how are you doing?
Great.
I had a quick question for Chad, because I have a lot of friends and coworkers masks, and they point at a study of how masks were proven to be.
No, you're cutting in and out, Ray. But did they say
sorry,
that your coworkers don't believe masks work? Is that right?
Correct. And I was just wondering if Chad had a study I could point at to lead them to that prove that masks work. Because they tend to bring up the study on influenza that indicates that masks weren't effective. So I'm saying it.
Okay. So what should Ray tell his friends, Chad? Thanks, Ray.
Yeah, so he should tell his friends to, if they're going to refer to a source, make sure it comes from the CDC. I know that there's a couple of quote-unquote studies out there. Several have been non-peer-reviewed about how masks don't work. There's this whole theological argument against stay-at-home orders. There's a lot of misinformation on the Internet. If they want to know the source of truth, the CDC has multiple studies that they have not only done themselves but reviewed that show that masking works. They just need to Google some sort of search term that says CDC masking research. You will get all of the first order peer-reviewed research to show that masking does in fact work.
Are you concerned at all that the WHO and the CDC are not messaging it on the same page now? Of course, the WHO is speaking to a global population. The CDC is speaking only to the domestic population, and that may be part of the reason why we're getting more stringent cautioning from the WHO.
Yeah, that's right. And I think that, that's exactly the point of the World Health Organization, is the amount of countries that rely on them for those recommendations is vastly different than just the CDC talking to Americans. World Health Organization has recommendations to cover countries that have low vaccination rates and high vaccination rates. So their message of conservative mask wearing is in line with who their intended audience is. That being the case, I think it is going to cause further confusion amongst a lot of the U.S. population of why World Health is saying this and the CDC is not agreeing with it, or vice versa. It doesn't help from the optics perspective that you have two leading health organizations not agreeing on something, but the general public just needs to understand they have different intended audiences, and the CDC does reserve the right, as data changes, to revise the recommendations.
If you're just tuning in, we're speaking with Chad Nielsen, UF Health Jack's infection specialist. He says cases of COVID in local hospitals have doubled over the last 2 weeks, most of them unvaccinated people. So get your vaccine. That Delta variant is spreading throughout Florida. Gregory tweets the show, Duval County Public Schools have 5 sites this summer with free vaccination opportunities. You can check that out at teamduval.org. On Facebook, Robert writes, I was a huge proponent for masks during the pandemic. Now I'm vaccinated. Most people I know are, except for a few choosing not to because of conspiracy theories they've read on Facebook. If they make the choice not to get vaccinated, it's their choice. I'm not wearing a mask now so that they don't get COVID. We all make our own choices and live and possibly die from the choices we make, he says. Richard writes on Facebook, with only slightly above 50% of the public fully vaccinated, not masking up is risky. I was fully vaccinated and careful, but I let my guard down at a small event and suffered the consequences by catching COVID. Masking should still be mandatory. Anti-vaxxers are perpetuating this pandemic, he says. Chad Nielsen, you can be fully vaccinated and still get what's called a breakthrough case of COVID, as this listener got. That's right?
Yes, that's correct. And just to put it out there, it's still very rare to find breakthrough cases. But it is possible, and we've known that it's possible. We know that the vaccine efficacy is run around 90 to 95%. So there are still 5% of people who could be exposed to COVID and get it despite being vaccinated. That being the case, those breakthrough cases are still far less likely to be hospitalized or suffer severe illness. So it is possible to get COVID despite vaccination. Look at the New York Yankees, where several members on their team tested positive. But guess what? They didn't end up in the hospital, and they didn't have a prolonged disease because they were vaccinated. And that's what the key there is.
Anna on the north side. Hello, Anna.
Hi, Melissa.
Go ahead.
How are you this morning?
I'm great. How are you? I'm so great. I can hardly stand Anna.
I'm sorry. I'm calling because I'm listening to the show. I'm fully vaccinated, and I am wholeheartedly in favor of continuing to mask. I just wanted to say that I was in a doctor's office this morning, and on the door, it has a sign. You know, they have a sign that says that if you're entering the building, you must be masked. And while I was waiting to be called in, a young lady walked in, no mask. And she walked right up to the window waiting to be checked in. And the receptionist had to ask her if she had a mask. Now, she had a mask in her purse. Why she did not put it on coming into the building, I don't know. But it's that kind of behavior that is going to continue to perpetuate this situation. We all have to be together in this, and it's not going to hurt us for a few minutes to put it on when we're inside a building.
That's right, Anna. I thank you for that, Anna. I am encouraged when I go to the grocery store to see most people are still masking up when they go and do that kind of shopping. And, you know, as we said a minute ago, we're all weary of this, but unfortunately, Chad, what we've learned from past pandemics is there are multiple waves. I mean, in 1918, mm-hmm. the flu pandemic went around the world three times before it finally mm-hmm. petered out, didn't it?
Yeah, that's right. And it typically is what we see with respiratory viral pandemics is that you will have multiple waves. You will have multiple time periods where either restrictions or vaccinations wane, where you have more cases. And so for this instance of this woman walking in without a mask on, I think people will try to do their best, but at times they don't care. And unfortunately, those are the people that we can't always change their behavior on. But I think in general, most people do put forth a good faith effort to listen to guidance and move forward to try and make this a safer world to live in right now.
Renee in Jacksonville. Hi, Renee. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, Melissa. Good morning, Chad.
Good morning.
I had a comment. I was one of those people that falsely thought that, you know, since that the vaccination was here, you know, that, you know, everything was going to be okay, and now we don't have to have these masks anymore, and, you know, and then I, you know, I have a three-year-old, and I, you know, take him to daycare, and I realize suddenly that, you know, you've got all these small children, you know, who can also, contract COVID and can also spread it to their parents, you know, or whomever they live with at home, and, you know, this could possibly start all over again and be worse. What are they doing to possibly vaccinate children? Is there any research there, anything about that?
Yeah, that's a great question, Renee. Chad.
Yeah, and good morning, Renee. Thanks for your comment. I myself have a four-year-old daughter who, you know, we've sent to school and summer camp and things like that. So I share in your concern there. But two things. Number one, even with Delta variant, we do know that kids are still far less likely to suffer from severe consequences of COVID if they get it. Number two, your actual question of what are they doing to research vaccinations on kids, all of the major pharmaceutical companies that have put out vaccines are doing research on younger age group kids to see if they can tolerate the vaccine, at what doses, and are they effective. We even have researchers here at UF Health who are involved in those studies because that is the goal, is by the fall, they really are trying to release the vaccine for kids as young as 4 to 5 because of those school-age kids that could still be potential vectors of disease. So they are working on it. I would expect I'd expect some news on that by the end of summer.
Okay. Thank you for that. Felix. Felix at the beaches. Hello, Felix. Good morning.
Hi, Melissa. Just a quick question. Is there any data, I mean, I know it's kind of early, about how much antibodies are in somebody who's been vaccinated? Because I met somebody who early on got COVID-19, and he got vaccinated, and then when he went a year later, his antibodies had reduced substantially. So that's my worry right now, is that I'm feeling that people, even with these two doses, and they can't, it's 95%, but we don't know if our how high our antibodies are and what percentage is. I mean, because we're talking about booster shots already, and when do we get those booster shots?
Thank you, Felix. Booster shots, Chad.
Yeah, so the latest research actually indicates that Pfizer, Moderna, Johnson & Johnson all are providing long-term efficacy and long-term high antibodies against the virus. People who have had COVID, what we see naturally, they were naturally infected with COVID on the earlier stages of the pandemic, even they have some amount of antibodies that will continue to persist in their body for 6 to 8 months after. But we know at this point, because remember, the first vaccines were really given to people over a year ago in studies, that the current vaccines do provide long-term antibody coverage for this virus moving forward. A booster may be necessary in the future, which all of these pharmaceutical companies are looking at in combination with CDC and FDA, but they're not required yet. And those boosters could be to further our coverage against new variants or existing variants. We're not to a point where we need them, but we are prepared to launch those programs and launch those vaccine boosters if needed.
So the bottom line, as Chad Nielsen keeps telling us, is get vaccinated. Please, everyone, if you haven't done it yet, go do it. It is the single most effective thing you can do to protect yourself and your loved ones. Chad Nielsen of UF Health Jacksonville, always so good to have you on the show. Thanks for being with us.
Yeah, very welcome. It's always a pleasure to be on. Thanks.
And much more still ahead. Later in the hour, some good news for your midweek and our What's Good Wednesdays, but up next.
He had a really rough time. He had to go to the children's ER twice. He had a cough, which I will never forget the sound of.
COVID and kids. One local family's story of long-haul COVID and its effect on their young son. That's next. Well, throughout this pandemic, we've heard a lot about how COVID-19 is less dangerous for children. That's true in the big picture, but there are plenty of kids who've been seriously impacted by the disease. And some children have come down with what's known as long COVID, long-haul patients, who have an array of issues that are still being studied. The impact on families of kids with long-term disease has been profound. Our producer here at WJCT, Heather Schatz, knows this all too well. Her 12-year-old son, Kyle, got COVID earlier this year, and it sickened him for months. Kyle is finally on the mend, but it's been a long road for him and his family. Both Heather and Kyle Schatz shared their story with me. Take a listen. Heather, Kyle, it's so good to have you here in the studio. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having us.
And I'm so glad that Kyle's doing better. So Heather, take us back, gosh, how many months has it been now, to when Kyle first got sick with COVID?
So in early February, he had cold symptoms and we got him tested and he was negative for COVID. He started to feel a little bit better, so he went back to baseball. He was doing virtual school because he has asthma and I have asthma, so we thought it would be better to keep him at home. He felt a little bit better and he went to baseball. A few days later, he was feeling even worse than he was initially, so we got him tested again and it did turn out to be COVID. Mm-hmm. So we did all the contract tracing with the school and his team, called his doctor, and because we think of his asthma, he had a really rough time. He had to go to the children's ER twice. He had a cough, which I will never forget the sound of. I don't know if everyone's kids had croup when they were babies, but it's sort of like this really loud barking cough, a little bit different, but it just felt like it was nonstop. And he had fever, not a really high fever, and some aches. He didn't lose his sense of taste or smell. He didn't really have stomach issues, but he was just really fatigued and coughing all the time. And it was really hard as a parent because we couldn't really go near him, so we would leave his food at the door, knock, run away. We all sort of felt like he was in prison or something. And we all isolated in different parts of the house and wore masks, which we actually had started to wear as soon as he had the cold symptoms, just in case. And so he had really good medical care, but no one could really figure out what to do at the time other than steroids and some different inhalers because everyone thought it was unusual for a kid his age, he was 12, to have such a bad case.
And for it to last so long, I think that's what I've observed in all of these months of us working together every day, is how this wore on your family because Kyle was sick for a long time.
Yes, so that was February. So he wasn't contagious anymore after the initial infection after 10 or 14 days. I don't remember, but we're going on month 5 of him still having lingering symptoms. And he is getting better. It's just very, very slow. Right now, it's mainly fatigue, headaches, and some issues, shortness of breath. And we just don't know how long it will continue for.
Right.
So, Kyle, as I sit here looking at you, you look great. I know you're feeling a lot better. Can you tell all our listeners what it was like for you as a kid to deal with this disease? Because I think you've been very brave.
It was hard not being able to, like, see anyone or do something. And I was just kind of sitting in bed, like, choking all day. And then it was, like, impossible to fall asleep. One day, I didn't fall asleep till 8:30 in the morning. And I lied, and I went to bed at 10:30 at night.
That had to have been really hard.
Mm-hmm.
What was the hardest part about it for you?
Not being able to see anyone, I think, and just being, like, by myself for a while.
Yeah, I would think that'd be hard for a grown-up, let alone a kid, to be stuck in your room like that for so long. So what would you say to people out there that, you know, they don't want to get the vaccine? Because you are a child who's now been vaccinated, and you've suffered quite a bit, and so is your whole family. And the more we can get the vaccine into more people, the less chance another kid like you might get sick.
Mm-hmm. It's worth it even though you don't feel good after it, but it feels much better than being sick for a long time.
That's right. So when you got the vaccine, you felt kind of yucky for a day, but now you're okay?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I'm so glad to hear that.
Thank you.
And what a well-behaved kid.
He's on his best behavior.
He's on his best behavior. Yes. So as a family, all four of you, your husband, Kyle, and his sister, Lily, you've all been traumatized by this experience. And I know that you're passionate about explaining to people that COVID does affect children and that long COVID, which is what Kyle had, is real for a lot of Americans, too.
Yeah, it is. And I know that they don't get it quite not as often as maybe adults do, but they are starting to see more and more cases pop up. And we're fortunate in that we have some great pediatric doctors here in town. Mm-hmm. But it is still really rare. And I mean, it's just a lot. We still go to doctors sometimes once or twice a week. But he had an outpatient procedure. I mean, they're really doing a good job rolling out everything. Mm-hmm. They can, but the issue is it's different in every kid, and what treatment works for you may not work for him, and we don't know the long-term effects yet or how long this will go on. So we're really grateful that we feel like everything that can be done is done, but we're just sad that mm-hmm. we were so careful, yet he ended up so sick.
Right. You kept Kyle at home with his sister in virtual school, and so the only contact he was having with anyone was his baseball team in the open air.
Yep.
And you think he might even with that, he might have gotten the virus that way.
Yeah, or at the supermarket if he had run into the supermarket a few times with my husband. But the only place he went very regularly was baseball. But we will never really know for sure. So,
and his lungs suffered and were damaged. So is that your big concern now, healthier lungs for him?
Yeah. Yeah. They've improved since right after he was sick. But we just, he's a baseball player. So we'd love to get him to the point where he feels okay to run around and throw and pitch and go back to playing. He missed his whole season this spring. So hopefully in the fall, he'll be feeling well enough to play again. Right, Kai?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. Are you looking forward to that, Kyle?
Yes.
How much do you like baseball?
It's my favorite thing to do.
Your favorite thing. Well, I really hope you are back on the field soon, and I'm so glad you're doing better. And, you know, a lot of people, after they get the vaccine, people who've had long COVID like you, they start to really feel a lot better. There's something about the vaccine that helps. So are you hoping that'll be the case for you?
Yes.
Yeah, I bet you are too, Heather.
Yeah.
As his mom.
Yeah.
We're going to have to see you, aren't we?
Yeah. Yeah. Fingers crossed. Can I say that? Yeah. Fingers crossed. We're hoping that he's continues to improve and that by fall he's normal or as normal as you used to be, right?
Well, I'm so glad that the Schatz family has made it through this ordeal. And I know it's been so hard. So thank you, Kyle. And thank you to Heather for sharing your story.
Thank you.
Well, as more people get vaccinated, more of us are looking to travel somewhere this summer. Within just the last 6 months, airlines operating out of Jacksonville International Airport have announced new nonstop service to several cities, including Los Angeles, Nashville, and Washington, D.C. Greg Willis is marketing manager for the Jacksonville Aviation Authority. He's on the line. Hi, Greg.
Hey, how are you?
I'm great. Thanks so much for being with us. So, new nonstop flights we can enjoy out of JIA. Tell us all about it.
Yeah, so it's been great to get some recent announcements and some flights we've been working on for years. You mentioned Los Angeles, New York, Nashville, and American a couple of weeks ago announced that they're going to start Austin, Texas service. So New Orleans is another market we're excited, recently started. So yeah, more travel options for Northeast Florida residents. Which is great coming off the year we just had.
Exactly. Tell me about that. How eager are the travelers coming into the airport? I just flew home from a trip and got back Sunday night. And, you know, I could just feel the excitement from people wanting to get on that plane and go somewhere.
Yeah, and I think that's especially going to be true over the July 4th weekend. I think we're going to see a lot of we'll probably have our busiest travel day, you know, over the last year or so. So, yeah, I think people have been, you know, they've been working from home. They've been in their houses. And, you know, they might have canceled that family vacation they had last year or haven't seen friends and family in a year. I personally am going to go up to Nashville this weekend and do Christmas in July with my family, who I haven't seen in 15 months. So I think it's a lot of those stories.
And so what's nice about this announcement is that the nonstop flights are key. Jacksonville is not Atlanta. It's not, you know, Chicago. It's not Dallas. Typically, when we fly somewhere from here, we have to connect to our ultimate destination. We have to do at least one connection. So the more nonstop flights we can sample from this airport, the better. Tell us a little bit about the process to get these nonstop flights, and is it based on just population growth here? How do airports like JIA land these new nonstop flights?
So I can tell you, just using Los Angeles as an example, JAX had Los Angeles service back in 2008, and it was a process of over a decade to get the JetBlue service that started in late March. And a lot of that is airports meeting with airlines, going to their headquarters, going to conferences. There's a team of people that do air service development at the airport, and they'll attend conferences and do what we call airport airline speed dating, where you sit down with an airport or an airline and you give a 20-minute pitch on your market, if it's an airline that doesn't serve your market. And if it's an airline that does serve your market, you talk about how things are going and what potential growth opportunities there might be. But we talk about, you know, the business connections that we might have between our two markets that we're trying to pitch. We might talk about, you know, population that's migrating from that region and why we should have nonstop flights. There's a whole litany of things that we talk about with airlines. They have access to numbers, but they don't necessarily know the story behind those numbers as it pertains to traffic and why we need nonstop flights.
So you tell them the story of this region. And let me ask you, Greg, coming off the pandemic with so many people moving to Florida, especially people who can work remotely, we have had a big influx of people coming here over the last year and a half. How will that impact your growth at the airport?
Hopefully positively, I think. You know, if you listen to industry experts, they say airlines can't dump enough new service into Florida. And while we might be smaller than Miami and Orlando, I think Jacksonville will be a beneficiary of that for sure. And we've seen that with some of these announcements, you know, Austin, LA, New Orleans, just to cite a few.
You know, I have to tell you, I'm glad that JIA isn't like the Miami or the Orlando airports. Having traveled out of both of those airports and having just flown through O'Hare last week, Jacksonville International Airport is a gem. It really is. It's so easy to get in and out of. So I'm a little scared of it getting too big, although I know that growth is good overall. Let me ask you one more thing about how COVID precautions are working with air travel. As I flew last week, you know, obviously when you go to the airport, when you get on a plane, you've still got to mask up. And tell us a little bit more about the protocols that are going to be in effect, I assume, all summer.
Yeah. So as you mentioned, masks are required while you're in the airport and on the aircraft. We still encourage passengers to socially distance where they can. It seems like when people are starting to board, that goes out the window, but I think that's human nature. We have our staff doing frequent cleanings of high touch areas throughout the terminal. And, you know, we've got plexiglass barriers at ticketing, info desk, gates, kind of, you know, the standard thing. So that's really it.
That's really it. Now, getting back to the new flights, you did announce this week that Allegiant Airlines, with its new flights to Nashville and D.C., they are offering one-way fares on these new routes as low as $39. How much demand are you seeing for these fares?
Well, you'd have to ask the airline that, but I think anybody's interested in a $39 fare. And what's interesting about a carrier like Allegiant is that because their fares are so low, they open up a segment of the traveling public that's not necessarily traveling. So people are able to benefit from those flights. And it means more passengers. But yeah, I think, you know, you advertise a $39 flight and that's going to get anybody's attention.
Sure. And there are new restaurants in the airport too, right? To capitalize on all this new traffic.
We opened the Club Jack's, which is a Priority Pass lounge, late last year. I should mention as we go into July 4th weekend that all of the restaurants post-security will be open for the traveling public. And then pre-pandemic, we announced BurgerFi and Southern Grounds would be opening post-security. I believe that those are still in the works, but, you know, haven't started construction on any of those yet. But excited for when that can happen.
Sure. Well, kudos on all the progress and excitement. Greg Willis, Marketing Manager for the Jacksonville Aviation Authority. Thanks, Greg.
Thanks, Melissa. Bye.
In a moment, from 4th of July fireworks to a new project at UNF, lots of positive news and notes. We're rounding up for your midweek. That's next. Don't go away.
Year has seen its share of protests against policing. History shows, however, that protests usually lead to more policing. Yale historian and law professor Elizabeth Hinton joins us to talk about why she uses the word rebellion rather than riot to describe these events, and about why many Black Americans feel the war on crime became a war on them. That's next time on Think. Tonight at 10 on WJCT News 89.9.
Peru's still undecided presidential contest was different for Latin America. Neither candidate identified as white. Right-winger Keiko Fujimori is Japanese-Peruvian. The left-leaning Pedro Castillo has indigenous roots.
There was a real explosion of racism comments, especially directed to Castillo.
Race, identity, and Peru's presidential vote on the world.
This afternoon at 3, here on WJCT News 89.9.
I'm Robin Young. Just in time for the 4th of July, here in our resident chef Kathy Gunst demonstrates some of her grilling favorites, including a simple but delicious clam stew in foil.
Throw a few tomatoes on there, and then we throw our clams on top. We don't open them because the heat will open them.
Next time, here and now.
Today at 2 on WJCT News 89.9.
As the search for survivors continues, the condo collapse in Surfside, Florida has sparked a lot of conversation around how to keep our buildings safe.
If the steel is exposed and loses its structural integrity, the concrete fails instantaneously.
We'll talk codes, our changing climate, and the new challenges they present for civil engineers. Next time on 1A.
Today, starting at 10 on WJCT News 89.9.
Welcome back. This Independence Day, we celebrate summer rising vaccination rates and family fun with fireworks along the river and other spots. However you spend the fourth holiday, we hope you take a moment to reflect on how much better things are looking overall this July than they did last year. If nothing else, this time of pandemic has reminded us all to count our blessings. Let's begin with thanking our first responders from Jacksonville. They've answered the call and joined the search and recovery operation in Surfside. The building collapse tragedy in South Florida has shocked the world, but what isn't shocking is the generosity of Floridians doing what they can to help survivors. An easy way you can help right now, donate to the new group Support Surfside. It's already raised more than $1.6 million. Including funds to launch a family assistance center in that neighborhood in South Florida for survivors of the building collapse. Well, what a coup for researchers at UNF. The University of North Florida is among 15 winners of the first Research Accelerator grants funded by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. Now, the grant program is to ensure researchers have the resources they need to leverage the national COVID-19 research database to study the direct and indirect impacts of COVID. UNF will get funding towards their project on telehealth disparity. UNF researchers include Dr. Cynthia Williams and Dr. Richard Shang. She's with the Brooks College of Health, and he's with the Coggin College of Business. I spoke with Dr. Williams Monday about this new study. Take a listen.
Well, it's a great opportunity, and we are so appreciative. The purpose of the study is to really study the factors such as demographics, socioeconomics, and health behaviors of vulnerable populations. We really want to ensure that telehealth is accessible to everyone. And so the results of the study will be used to inform culturally sensitive programs that will help us specifically target vulnerable populations, so to ensure that they do have access to telehealth, similar to everyone. We really do want to promote health equity with the study.
With more than 250 million unique patients and 85 billion records, the COVID-19 research database is the largest repository of real-world data being made available to public health researchers like those at UNF. We'll follow along with their study. Well, Jacksonville is the third largest U.S. city with a large concentration of Palestinian Americans. This week, more than 1,000 people from across the country and the world are coming to town for a massive family reunion hosted by the Ramallah American Club of Jacksonville. Attendees of this reunion can trace their ancestry to the Hadadin family in the city of Ramallah, Palestine, and that includes many local citizens. Well, what are your plans for the 4th? Hopefully they include checking out some incendiary light shows. The city's 4th of July fireworks celebration returns this year to multiple locations around town. The fun begins at 9:45 p.m. Sunday night, but there will also be a family-friendly event kicking off around 5 o'clock downtown along the riverfront. I spoke with Paola Lorenza with the City of Jax Sports and Entertainment Office.
Hey, Paola, tell us all about the fireworks this weekend.
Absolutely. So this weekend we have our Jacksonville's 4th of July fireworks celebration that's returning at multiple locations to celebrate the nation's independence.
That's right. So all over town, people will have the opportunity to check out the fireworks. There's 6 spots, correct?
Yeah, there are 6 different locations. So the first one is the one everyone's used to, downtown Jacksonville. Then we have the St. John's Town Center, FSCJ North Campus, Avenues Mall, Trinity Baptist Church, and Ed Aston Regional Park.
Okay, so anywhere you like, you can go watch fireworks. What's special about the downtown location this year?
Yeah, so all of the locations will have the spectacular fireworks display that'll begin at 9:45 p.m., but the downtown location located at Riverfront Plaza will offer a concert presented by Miller Electric Company featuring the Brian Malpass Band and Straight Up, as well as a family fun zone including inflatable skee ball, an obstacle course, inflatable axe throwing, bounce houses, food trucks, and drinks. Lots of fun for everyone in the family.
Yeah, and then now that kicks off around 5 o'clock. This is all free, too. No tickets needed for any of these.
Yeah, completely free. The only thing will be if you do come downtown, food and drinks will be available for purchase, but all of the activities for the kids and the family will be free.
Excellent. More at the City of Jax events website, events.coj.net. Any more thoughts about the 4th of July coming back in full force as we're coming out of this pandemic and the excitement around that?
Yeah, we're all very excited. It's great that we were able to keep all of the different locations because, you know, last year we wanted to do that to give everyone an opportunity to watch the show from their homes due to the pandemic. But now this year, being able to continue that and start a new tradition and keep everyone celebrating and excited and coming together as a community is really important to us.
So have fun, everybody, wherever you go to check out the fireworks. Get your anxious dog a thunder shirt. I know that from personal experience. And that's our show. Thanks so much for listening. And thanks to all of our guests and callers, along with producer Heather Schatz, director Josh Torres, editorial director Jessica Palumbo, and digital editor Bill Bortsfield. I'm Melissa Ross. This is First Coast Connect on WJCT News, 89.9 Jacksonville. Catch our podcast up later today wherever you like to listen. You can also listen through the WJCT app. Download it today and listen to all our great content right there. Have a great day, everyone.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.